Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo. Buying a car can be a stressful experience. TrueCar.com is changing that forever. Simple, fair, and a fun way to buy a car. TrueCar users save time and money, helping them to never overpay.
You know you get the fair price because they show you what others paid for the car you're looking for. TrueCar analyzes what people are paying for their cars in your market and shares it with consumers so they never have to overpay.
Genius. Over a million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and users see an average savings of $3,046 off MSRP. Drew, stifle yourself. Three steps here.
All right.
Go to TrueCar.com. Yeah. All right was not stifling yourself. Go to TrueCar.com. Find out what other people paid.
Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings certificate.
Then take it to the TrueCar Certified Dealer for a hassle-free buying experience.
Save time, save money, never overpay. TrueCar.com.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Am I getting that rhythm right? He says it with a certain rhythm that I can't quite capture.
I think that was the best one so
far.
That
was the best. Well, yeah. I was paying attention. I wasn't just saying the words. It is the Adam and Drew podcast. Adam is still, he's on the road. He's doing his movie. He's promoting his book. He'll be back very, very soon. So we appreciate you supporting the show in the meantime and welcoming various co-hosts that have stood in for the great Adam Carolla. Today, Randy and Jason Sklar, Sklar Brothers. Welcome, gentlemen.
Great to see you.
It takes two of us to equal one Adam.
Two of us equal maybe. Like maybe can come close. Maybe
two of you make half an Adam?
We're four-fifths of an Adam.
Four-fifths of an Adam. It's pretty good. Most people don't even measure up to that.
Wow. Yeah. Look, that's pretty good. It's like a wall of – you have to get like a wall of comedy and then you're one, like almost one Adam.
The stand-up special these guys are doing is called What Are We Talking About? It's available on Netflix and iTunes. Their podcast, 200th episode, just completed.
Yes. Yeah, we completed. It's going to be released next week. We interviewed Jim Rohn. We talk about radio and we did the radio show with you. And it's so funny because there are those – sort of those radio shows that stand in the pantheons, you know, the pantheon of radio shows. Those are the ones in the national. Jim Rome is it. You were it. Stern, obviously.
Yeah.
So he's not a guy who gives a lot of interviews.
And Tom Likas.
Likas was, you know, Loveline was never acknowledged.
Why wasn't that?
It's on for 30 years. 30 years and never anybody going, hey, that was an important radio show.
Instead,
it's like Imus and you know all these other people get to.
I can just say this, that there was like a period of time when before I had Sirius Radio, when I'd be driving around or driving home from a stand-up gig or whatnot and listening to Loveline, and it was just – it was so fascinating. I just could not turn it off. Like both, it's the perfect merging of two personalities approaching one subject.
You and then the radio allowing people to be anonymous, allowing people to be so open.
The intimacy of it was really
the intimacy was there, but the openness that the listeners had for us was just fascinating.
Of course, my favorite thing is like, just how old are you? 14, like 15, and there's just a long pause. When did your uncle touch it? I mean, it was literally like, it was just, we'd everything.
We'd hear their voice.
You heard everything.
We'd have a reaction to it.
Right.
And we'd go, all right, let's put some money down.
Yeah. Here we go. Here we go. Lay it down. But kudos to you
We would do it. The reason we did that is because we'd go, this doesn't feel right to me. Something's happened to you. So let's talk about that trauma.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I mean, it's fine. What are you talking about? Yeah. How dare you go to things like that? What?
Yeah.
So to get around that whole phenomenon, those walls, we just go, Hang on, we're putting you on hold a second. Mm-hmm. Let's make a bet. What age? Because we know it for sure happens. We don't want to get into this bullshit about
when
it
do you think
didn't.
It went down?
Let's see if we can get the right age, and so you can no longer deny that this happened.
Right.
Because we can feel what we got good at, and I'm still good at, is hearing. I literally, in my mind's eye, would see that person at the age at which they were abused. Because the voice would sort of reflect that stage of development. With women particularly, almost as though they just stopped developing. And
right,
the voice
that
reflected
point.
That. Yep. Yeah. It's like a developmental arrest. And so we would just go, okay, well,
I can tell you it was 12.
I can see a 12-year-old when I talk to
that's
you.
That's right.
So therefore, something happened when you were 12. What happened?
I mean, it was amazing. The most fascinating thing ever. And you know, you're sitting here with these incredibly important moments for these people. They're opening up if you can get them to open up. And in that tension of that moment, like Adam would be funny and guys would just go off on something else.
Thus we do a podcast. Thus we still do this.
Right.
And speaking of podcasts, Scarborough Country is their podcast, available on iTunes Tuesdays and Fridays. Website is SuperSklars, SKLARS.com, Twitter handle at Sklar Brothers. How do you decide who divides up these?
On the tweeting? We both tweet, and then we both have a key, and we turn it at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like the nuclear codes. I think it is an exercise in trust. You literally are like, well, I think this is funny. I'm going to tweet. And we had a big
issue. But you identify which of you is tweeting?
No, we don't. We don't because it's, you know, Twitter is you got to be economical with the characters. To then put in parentheses, Randy or Jason seems like antithetical.
Yeah.
But what we did do and is sort of, you know, we were really thinking, should I get one and Jason get one and we get one together? And we just felt like that was dividing it too much. We are a stage team.
Yeah.
We represent the Sklar Brothers as a brand.
Yeah.
So why not just have that be the brand that tweets out what we say? And occasionally, sometimes as we're tweeting, I might say, I saw this or, you know, I think this or I feel this. We don't care.
Do you ever take jobs separate from one another, acting jobs?
Yes. Yes, I did Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Randy did not. And it was great.
It's not a sore subject.
Not at all. I loved it. It was fantastic.
And did you go out on the
audition against each other? No. Jeff Garland, who's a buddy of ours, was like, oh, this is the role here that one of the Sklar Brothers could do it. Get me one of them if he can't do it.
Probably shout it out of a window. Get me a Sklar!
Character called for glasses.
Yeah, that's right.
Character called for glasses. And
you know, he was a little effete. So I stepped in and I got the role. I had a good audition. I booked it. And then, you know, that kind of excluded Randy from being able to do the show. But
good times.
But it was, you know, we have done a lot of stuff separately. But we kind of love working together. We feel like there's more we have to explore. I mean, twins, from a psychological perspective, twins, they aren't really, in our opinion, explored in the way that they need to be or have been in media. Certainly, like, the nuances of the relationship. People want to immediately go to this broad sort of, like, who's the good twin? Who's the evil twin?
What roles are they taking on? And that always felt a little inorganic to the two of us.
Who's more dominant? Who is – and yes, that's sometimes – but maybe we have a unique twin relationship where there's – it's just more nuanced. Like sometimes one of us steps up, sometimes the other one does.
Well, I got a bunch of questions about that. But
please,
before I get into that, let me ask about your eyesight. So you wear glasses, you're nearsighted.
I need them. I need them. Yeah.
Did you have laser or what the hell?
No, I don't.
Just doesn't need it.
I don't need
it.
Weird. And I've actually had my cornea scratched.
This is a case for epigenetics.
This is like the movie.
So this is why identical twins are not identical.
That's right.
You start identical, but epigenetics and environment determine.
Environment determines.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Nearsightedness is not one of those things you think of as epigenetic or environmental.
They said it was caused by astigmatism in one of my eyes.
Oh, you have astigmatism.
He may even have it, but it doesn't bother him.
Right.
It doesn't bother him.
He may compensate for it.
Maybe, on some level. Although my
brain is so plastic, that may be how he does that.
That might be how he does it.
Never know. Interesting.
Never know.
So let me...
twins creep us out, though. I will say that.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
They creep us out.
Well, I think people are creeped out generally.
Totally. I get it.
Yeah, I understand that.
Oh, yeah.
Identical twins. So you're creeped out when you see identical twins.
Just because it's more of like an issue of they're not, I feel like.
Social conditioning of how twins think they're supposed to behave.
Wait. I'm just reading my own feelings. When you guys talk about your relationship, it makes me uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
Because it feels too close or too weird. Something's weird about it. And you're saying that you feel the same weirdness when you look at
other identical twins. I see other identical twins.
What do you feel? And how is that possible? You feel the same thing when you're in the middle of that?
Because I feel like they are not exploring it. They fall on sort of social mores.
You feel uncomfortable because they're not as comfortable.
Or connected with it. That they're just like, oh, we got to talk at the same time because we're twins or we're going to go to Twinsburg, Ohio. You know, they have these huge,
like conventions at Twinsburg, Ohio.
Identical twins.
Twins descend upon it. 600,000 twins, 300,000 pairs of twins.
Identical twins.
Yes.
And fraternal twins, although I'm sure there's a stratification, like the more you look alike, the cooler you are, the more valuable you are there. I have no idea. But like twins will leave their spouses. There's like whatever happens at Twinsburg stays at Twins. It's like fucked up Vegas.
Giant twin orgy.
Yeah. And so, you know, that kind of in some way creeps out. Like, I don't know. I mean, we talk about like cloning as an idea. You know, like we cloned a sheep about
it. You are cloned.
We are, essentially, yes.
No, not essentially. No, we are. That's what a clone is.
But we cloned a sheep 10 years ago.
We're going to clone, yes.
Yeah. We cloned a sheep successfully 10 years ago.
Yes.
A decade
from,
ago.
An adult sheep from one cell.
Why have we not heard anything about it? See, that to me tells me that we
haven't heard about cloning since 2003.
I haven't heard anything about, hey, we've cloned all these. No, that to me says that they've cloned people and they all live underneath the Denver airport. I'm sorry. That's what I believe.
I think there are three Justin Biebers.
Well, we clone cells now. We clone. You know,
yeah, of course.
We clone various things.
But there was a media push.
Right.
There was a media push to clone an adult.
Well, cloning had a whole different connotation back in the 70s. Remember
this was 2003. Yes, I remember Sleeper.
Yeah. Cloned the president from his nose.
Sure, yeah. Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, we kind of did that with a cell with a sheep.
Yeah,
Dolly.
Yeah. No, well, why couldn't we? But we sort of do that with fertility treatment. That's sort of what that is.
We absolutely do that with fertility treatment, and that is...
That's why we don't like fertility drugs. Anything that's going to make us seem less important, less significant or unique. No, but I mean, it is a fascinating relationship, and I actually will say that having kids and families has been such a wonderful thing for the two of us and allows us to work because...
Does it weird your wives out?
No. No. In your family, my kids don't think of us as... They don't even think of us as twins. They don't
just
even think
uncle.
Yeah, Uncle Jason.
There's Uncle Jason,
and that's my dad.
And that's my dad. And you are this whole other thing to them. I'm dad. I serve
Is that a new experience for you now?
No, I have kids that are 7 and 9. So
no, but I mean the fact that they see you so separately from your brother, is that in any way novel?
You know, I think it was, but our parents did a very small but significant thing when we were kids. They put us in separate rooms, which the ability to close your door and be yourself without the other person around allowed us, I think, to individually develop in a way that allowed us to then want to spend time together.
And what point in your life was the wanting to spend time together developing?
I think the whole time. I think we always loved being around each other, and our parents encouraged it, and they told us we're individuals, but we're also this unique
said rely on each other, but don't depend on each other. I know that's a very simple, you know, there's like line, but it was a smart way to play it. And when people ask us, they have friends of ours who have twins and whatnot, and they're like, what do I do? What do you guys do?
Well, we had triplets. That's why I'm sort of fascinated.
Oh, shit. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're not identical, but they're, you know. It's still...
No, but they're all the same age. To me, that's the most significant thing about being twins. Not that you look alike, but that you grow up at the same time, experiencing things at the same time. Because think about if you had a kid 5 years apart.
Yeah.
Which I do.
Or even our kids. Okay. So I have two daughters, 7 and 9, and he's got a son who's 5. My kids grew up in this weird bubble right before iPads and iPhones really took over in kids. And the difference between my 7-year-old and his 5-year-old is like there's a gulf. I mean, it's gigantic in comparison.
It's, it's almost generational. It's crazy.
So, but if you were both 5, your triplets are all 5 or whatever, growing up at the same time, they're experiencing the world at the same time, at the same level.
Yeah.
And that to me is the most significant thing. That to me is the most interesting part about being twins.
Now, my kids have gone to colleges. Vastly different all over the place.
Yeah.
You guys both went to the University of Michigan, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
How did you decide to do that, and was that the right decision?
We decided – the only thing we did together was decide to apply to the same schools.
We didn't have a lot of money. Our parents weren't, you know, loaded.
Where'd you guys live?
We lived in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
And so they said kind of, you know,
Our dad went there, and we were kind of like, we don't want to stay home.
Go away from St. Louis. But we were like, they said, pick a reach, pick a school that you think you can get, and pick a safety school. Yeah, That's it.
Yeah. So Penn, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Got into all three. Went to Penn. I mean, imagine, Jewish parents, you're like, we're turning down an Ivy League school. But we went, and we're like, God, people do not look like they're having fun here. Yeah. They just were so stressed out. I mean, there were nice kids and nice people there, but you just got the feeling that, like, they just weren't happy. Then you went to Michigan, and it's, like, really smart, really dynamic people, also having a blast.
What'd you study?
English.
Yeah,
literature. Both you studied English. Yeah.
But you know, I will say this: we had totally separate.
It's such a big school; we had different classes.
So there were whole people on our campus that didn't know that we were twins. So people would come up and just start being nice to me, and I was like, "Oh yeah, you don't know who I am, but you know that's okay."
That's funny.
Yeah, it was crazy, but again, it allowed us to sort of develop individually our own thing.
So now the obligatory question that every interviewer must ask a set of identical twins is:
do you
have
telepathic powers?
Well, is that one, which no. Right?
If you get hurt, does he feel it?
Whose dick is larger?
It was that one.
Uh-huh.
No, did you switch girlfriend?
We never did that. Okay. Never did that because, again, there was this sense, and this kind of informed our comedy on some level, because we started getting into comedy when we were about 10 or 11 years old.
Oh, wow.
Really fascinated with, like, the films of Mel Brooks, and Airplane came out kind of around that time.
Blazing Saddles and Airplane were two movies. This Blazing Saddles is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year,
Jesus,
which is crazy. Those movies, like,
we taped them and then watched them
affected
over,
us so deeply.
Over and over. And then, like, Letterman, you know, sort of early Letterman, just fascinated by that. And obviously Saturday Night Live, we would sort of study all the sketches and whatnot. But, like, we were getting into comedy. What we were learning is that there were things you didn't do because they were hack. And that felt like a hack thing to switch, that's like, oh, that's what everybody does.
Right.
So go the opposite direction.
A hack movie comedy would put that in the comedy.
Right. So don't do that. A hack comedian would be like, would make the joke that everybody would think that they were going to make. But if you went in the opposite direction, that was somehow more valuable. So we would say, everybody's like, you got to switch classes. And you're kind of like, or switch girlfriends or switch classes in school.
Yeah.
First of all, I was like, I don't want to be in his class. Yeah. I barely want to be in my class, let alone a class I don't know what the fuck's going on.
There's a reason I'm not taking
that class.
Yes!
That's right. Why would we say? I mean, and who, you then start to go to the full, like, who is it fooling? Who is this for?
Right.
You know, to put one over on a girl, for what? Like, for the high five afterwards to the one person that you're bragging about it to?
It's kind of like a backdoor rape, too, when you think about
oh,
it.
Oh, absolutely.
You're like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, no, it's a deeply...
it's devious.
Devious, yeah.
It's right? Sociopathic on some level.
It is, but no one can resist the thought of it.
No one can resist the thought of it because there is, I believe, with twins also a certain wish fulfillment for single...
What's the ring of Gyges? It's like if I could had a ring, I could twist it and become invisible.
Right.
What would I do?
What would I do?
So if I were the identical of another person, I could be myself but step into his role.
That's right.
That's
the ring of Gyges.
Wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
A little bit of wish fulfillment there.
Let me... I want to get some phone calls early here if you guys don't, because we have people on hold. I want to remind everybody to get Adam's new book, President Me, which is on the New York Times. It's on the New York Times bestseller list already?
I'm sure it is.
It will be. But yeah, it's just out this week.
It will be.
Fund anything. Be sure to fight the patent trolls. Fundanything.com.
Please. This affects all of us.
We'll
on
talk about
level.
It. Go ahead. We need to hear from everybody we possibly can.
I mean, it's there are these patent.
There was actually a brilliant This American Life on the patent trolls, and I heard it. And long before this fight was taken up by Marin and by Adam and
it's
everybody.
A very, very good episode.
Fascinating. It's just a place good. In Texas where there's nothing. It's like these like empty office buildings in nowhere. And these people just buy up these general patents, and then they go, you're doing my thing. And then they bully people into settling out of court. And you know what? It's not even fine to do that to a big corporation. It's bullshit. And it's such a cowardly, bullshit way to make money.
Think of how they positioned it, too. They're not going to take on iTunes and Amazon because they have hot and cold running attorneys. They'll get squashed.
That's right.
They're not going to take on the little guys because they can't make any money out of them.
They're going to go mid-range.
Mid-range. Adam, perfect. Direct hit. Let's get him to settle. And then, by the way, then we can collect from Amazon and iTunes with a precedent.
Right. And you know, Adam has worked really hard to build up what he's done. And even if ultimately he had to pay something, it would be horrible for him. It would be a horrible moment. There are smaller places like Earwolf, which is the podcast network that we're on, that would have to shut down. Like if they had to settle, like they'd be done. I mean, Adam would maybe be done too. So it's
right.
It's horrible.
It will undo podcasting.
It would undo podcasting
for so much people, and just for the simple fact that like there are people out there creating things, and then there are people out there trying to tear those things down.
That's right.
If you are on the side of people creating things,
not just creating, being productive.
That's right.
As opposed to stopping productivity.
Right.
Now, in Adam's book, I heard him on Stern talking about this. He has an interesting bit about the U.S. Post Office.
Mm-hmm.
He said, imagine if someone handed you a piece of paper and said, get this to Maine in 3 days.
yeah.
Oh, by the way, here's 45 cents.
Right. Yeah. Do it for 45 cents.
For that much? I know. It's ridiculous.
And so it's amazing that people complain about postage.
Right.
And even more, as he would say, pussy to... I didn't read what that was, Gary, by the way. Thank you for that.
That's really funny.
That is
even more pussy to complain about the 3 cents increases that we in this country... Adam says, Gary's just notifying me that Adam says if he loses this patent battle, he will stop. He will stop podcasting.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, so
that will bring podcasting to a halt.
Which, you know, you love the show, so you don't want this to go.
And for many people, you need it to get through.
That breaks my heart to even hear that. I didn't realize he was that adamant about this.
About it, too.
Podcasting is the one really free enterprise in entertainment right now.
First thing you said to us when we walked in the hallway?
We were out there with Bert Kreischer and we were talking, and I said, isn't podcasting the freeing?
So liberating.
It's liberating. We can just do what we want, directly to the consumer.
Take as much time as you want. It's usually enjoyed in people's ears, so you're literally inside someone's head.
I can go seek out who I want to listen to and spend time with. If I'm a podcast consumer, that could all end. But anyway, but as far as the stamp goes, there is not only should we not be complaining about the 47 cents we have to pay or 49 cents for a stamp, there's even a better way to do stamps now with stamps.com. You don't even have to go to the post office. Don't waste your time. So now, not only –
easiest. They sponsor our podcast too. We love these guys. They're absolutely the best thing forever. Because if it's 3 a.m. and you're like, oh my god, I need a stamp.
An early adopter of this. You can buy and print official U.S. postage on your computer, on your printer, 24/7 post office right at your desk. Save 80% compared to postage meter and no trips to the post office. Plus other discounts you can't get at the post office. And we of course have our special offer. Enter the promo code ADS for this no risk trial. $110 bonus offer. Every time. Say it every time. $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale, $55 of free postage.
That's a ton of free postage, by the way.
It's money.
That's so much free postage.
$55 with the free postage.
You can fire off angry missives to people just with all that free postage like a king.
So go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in ADS, stamps.com, promo code ADS.
Let's get to some calls.
Get some calls. Do I have to take a break in this show, anybody? I do need a break. Okay, let's do a couple calls before the break. Can you tell me who's been on hold the longest? Certainly line one, yeah. 1 in 5? Okay, let's do line one. This is John. John, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was calling because I'm an alcoholic in recovery for almost 3 years. I've been in the program. I recently was discussing with a therapist of mine, you know, just like some difficulty with focus and you know, I'm in school and I'm in work and I got a lot going on. But basically, she started indicating, okay, you know, you might have some mild ADHD and have you ever thought about taking a stimulant? And obviously, I was very nervous about the idea of taking Adderall or something. You know, you hear about the negative effects of it. I was curious about your recommendation or your experience with.
Yes. I'm going to give you my opinion. It's somewhat of a minority opinion, but it is informed by lots of experience, lots of it. And here it is. Under no circumstances do you take a psychostimulant. I've seen it take down so many patients you can't even imagine. It takes a while. Takes up to 12 months sometimes, but it guaranteed will take you down. It's dextroamphetamine. That's the drug. You don't think your disease is going to love that? Try it. Your disease, it's slow onset, but you're full. All the thinking and distortions and bullshitting comes back over a period of time on the psychostimulant. I would say.
Are there natural things that you can – herbal or no?
No, because anything that's sufficiently psychostimulant to have an effect is a pharmacological agent. Yeah, it's going to trigger the medial forebrain bundle, and that's active disease.
Can you drop out of school?
No, but I would conservatively say 100% of my patients have ADD and ADHD.
Right.
And if they were under 18, it's actually a good idea to treat them. The adolescent brain is actually very different, even when it has addiction, than an adult brain. Adult with addiction under, in my opinion, no circumstances should they take a psychostimulant.
How does he handle the focus thing?
Well, they're like we all do. You train
your brain. Yeah,
you train your brain to be focused. There was just a New York Times article today that was talking about mindfulness.
John Kabat-Zinn. Go look it up online. He has some amazing
guided meditations. You're jumping all over this. Did you see the same article?
No, but my wife and I've listened to mindfulness.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is a very simple thing.
I'm sorry, it was last Tuesday in the New York Times.
It's a very simple thing. It's like even like taking a mindfulness approach to the way you eat. As you're eating, we just shovel shit into our mouths and we're done. Like take each bite. Chew it. Think about where the food came from. That's the beginning of mindfulness. And if you apply that to your life, that's a simple example.
Look at the science section of last Tuesday's New York Times. There's a very dramatic article about the effects of mindfulness on ADD. That is a scientific study, stands up to scientific scrutiny, that has a significant effect, as good as a pharmacological agent. And believe me, mindfulness is very helpful for people in recovery.
Can I ask
the
question? How much sleep do you get at night?
I have a really hard time falling asleep, but I probably do get, I don't know, 7 hours most of the time.
I mean, we did a show on the History Channel called The United Stats of America, and we talked about how, you know, what most adults need is like 8+ hours of sleep. You know, I know maybe it's a simple issue of trying to get to bed earlier. The idea of trying to burn the candle at both ends, it sounds like you're busy, or I'm going to get work done late at night so that it helps me. That actually winds up hurting you in the end, and maybe that's a way to restore a little bit of focus as well.
It's a good idea. And there are, to go back to pharmacological agents, there are things you can use. You can use things like clonidine and Intuniv, other classes of medications for ADD that are not psychostimulants. Okay.
Okay.
But the psychostimulant.
I appreciate the advice.
Psychostimulant will work, but at a huge cost to your recovery.
But by the way, congrats on 3 years working on that. That is awesome.
John, and by the way, let me just say, it seems to me, again, the brief moment we've spoken to you, but I'm just sort of hearing somebody that's 3 years into recovering and seeing a therapist, the person that does that is usually somebody going for what I call a full recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You want to return to a flourishing life that's better than you knew you could be. Stay with that.
Give yourself credit for making those choices.
You know what I'm saying, John?
Yeah, I do.
That's what you're going for, right? You want a full recovery. You don't want just not do drugs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and covering up with a psychostimulant or any medication at this point is just...
You don't need it. It's going to get
there's,
in your way.
There's, for what you're doing, there's better ways to do it, okay?
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right, take a quick break and back with the Sklar Brothers and your calls after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I'm going to tell you some Mother's Day stories about my grandmothers, and one of them gave birth to my father on a kitchen table in Brooklyn. Don't miss it. Listen for free through iTunes or visit LarryMillerPodcast.com.
With the Adam and Drew Show with our special guest host, Randy and Jason Sklar. What are we talking about is their stand-up special. Sklarborough Country is their
We got to have you on our podcast. I know you're a busy man, but I would love to have you on.
Does Scarborough ever give you shit?
No.
About
we try to make it enough to. It's Sklarborough.
I was converting it to Sklarborough in my head.
I know. He doesn't get mad at us, but if he did, we'd have to take him down.
Before we go to calls, I want to mention our friends at BarkBox. You guys have dogs?
Yes, I have an English bulldog who I think is racist, by the way. I actually happen to know he's racist.
He doesn't like dark skin.
No, I've been secretly recording him with Beast of Viana.
You sure? You sure it's not? I think most of the racism in dogs comes from dark-skinned men carrying leaf blowers.
Do you want to hear?
Leaf blowers freak the shit out of dogs.
I know. My dog is scared about it. Do you want to hear seriously why I think he's racist? So, and we talk about this in our stand-up, but there's an older Asian couple in my neighborhood, super cool. I love these guys. They have a little dog I have an English bulldog, and they have a little dog. And my dog doesn't play great with other dogs, but he actually likes this dog. Whenever they're out...
Is it one of those crazy, huge, fat...
No, he's actually in great shape.
Okay.
But he is a little skittish and doesn't do well with other dogs. But he plays well with his dog, Travis.
He grunts,
he snores, he farts, he's amazing. It's like literally we adopted someone's grandpa. So he plays with Travis a little bit, and what they do, the older Asian couple, is they have meat treats in their fanny packs, which is
kind of
so Asian.
When you think about a little shabu shabu.
And whenever Travis is out, they'll give him a little meat treat. Now they'll give my dog, Roman, a little meat treat, and now Roman doesn't even play with Travis anymore. He just walks right up to them and waits for his meat treat.
Sure.
So the other day I'm walking home,
And the dog knows after I drop my kids off at school, he knows the route. You go up the hill to the right and you're home. So I start going up the hill and the dog, my dog Roman, just takes off in the other direction. I'm like, where is he going? I see that he's making a beeline towards a different older Asian man in my neighborhood and he sits down and he waits for a treat. Now,
that's dog racism. Right there. A little bit. It's not German Shepherd in the 1960s races, but it's still dog races.
Fair enough.
Right? Fair enough.
It's more like profiling.
And it's positive profiling, but still it's profiling nonetheless.
But if you have a dog, you know that if you want to correct dog behavior, you got to do it in the moment.
You have to do it in the moment, but in order to do it, I have to do it in front of this guy. So I literally have to be like,
you look like
more of a racist.
You are a bad Roman. You are a bad dog. You're a racist. Like, we can't assume that all older Asian people are nice.
And then to give him a meat treat.
You can't assume that all older Asian people in our neighborhood are nice.
Look, he might have been in World War II.
We don't know.
I don't know how old the guy is.
He could be 40, could be 80. Usually I can't tell. What, you know, most Asian people, there's like a range there. You can't tell. And then I'm getting into that in front of this guy. It's terrible. He made
me
just.
It is bad news. You come off as the racist.
I come off as a racist. Some Asian cultures want to eat you.
Dogs embarrass us. But you can keep them happy with BarkBox, monthly box treats, toys, goodies delivered right to your door. Sign up at BarkBox.com/Adam. Not Adam and Drew, but /Adam, yes. to save 20% on your first subscription. Each BarkBox contains 4 to 6 awesome full-size products, including innovative toys, gadgets, natural healthy treats, and more. And you can get the meat treats. You
know,
you get
meat treats. Those I'm sure they have the poop bags.
They do, biodegradable poop bags. The meats are like a lean, you know, elk and stuff like that. Really good
so
stuff
good for them. So good.
10% of the revenue goes to local shelters across the U.S. and Canada.
Which is awesome.
In 2013, BarkBox donated over $150,000 to dogs in need. Help them give $1 million in 2014.
That's a reason to do this right here, right now.
And you will save 20% on your new subscription. I choke on it. at BarkBox.com/Adam. Again, that is BarkBox.com/Adam to save your 20%. Sounds really cool. Toys, food, right to your door.
Even for racist dogs.
You can sort of train the racism out of your dog with certain elk treats. Meat. That's right. Let's go to the phone lines again. This now is Danny. What's up, Danny?
Hey, Dr. Drew. Big fan.
Thank you, buddy.
Just calling in. I just broke off my engagement. With my high school sweetheart for 10 years.
Oh, my God. That's rough.
Yeah. It's very rough. So it's the hardest thing I had to do in my life.
Well, let's talk about it for a second. So when you say you just broke it off, when?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Feels like I just did it.
And yeah. When was the wedding? When was that going to be?
End of June.
Oh.
All right. Mm-hmm. Stuff was ordered.
You did it because...
I was freaking out about not having experiences and stuff like that. I just wasn't fully satisfied.
And how long were you feeling like, why am I still in this?
About 6 or 7 months.
So how long was the engagement?
A year.
Yeah. So
were you guys having trouble?
Not really, no. We were pretty healthy relationship. But
it's unhealthy in that you're clinging to this girl since you were 17. That's not healthy.
That's not healthy. Right. That's all I know. So.
Right. And so the crazy thing about these clingy, addictive adolescent relationships is the people that get in them, first of all, have that proclivity to that kind of enmeshment. But then more seriously, they don't know how to get out.
Also, you change. Think about how much you change from 17 to 27 is like insane. And even from 27 to 37, you're a different person.
I mean, and when our parents were of that age, a lot of parents got married at 20, 21, 22.
Yeah, 18,
and then they got divorced 10 years later. You've been in a 10-year marriage per se, whether you got married or not. You've been in that. If you've been monogamous and with this person, then you've kind of been in that.
And I'll tell you what. I have no patience with guys that – like you, Danny, who then get married and then at 40 have a little money in their pocket, now have a little game. It's like, hey, now I've got 3 kids and well, fuck it. I need to go. Yeah. I can't resist. I'm miserable in marriage. I got to go. I have no patience for that.
And by the way, this seems shitty, but from the outside perspective, the beauty is you guys are both, I guess, are you 27? Is that how old you are?
Well, I'm 28. Just turned 28.
28. But, you guys are young.
That's why I did it.
But you're young.
You're young, and you did the right thing.
Yeah. She's young. She'll find somebody.
I've listened to you guys a lot, and that's why I did it now, because I've never cheated, but I knew I would just get that urge later in life.
Right.
So. That's an incredibly evolved way to look at that.
I have no patience for the guys The 15-year later who fuck up kids' lives and their 15 wives.
15-year Dannys.
Yeah. I come, hats off to the Danny that's 28 and doing the right thing. It's painful. It's awful. It's miserable. It's cautionary for anybody else out there who's 22 in a four-year relationship.
Yeah.
That seems a little, I don't know, I guess I love her, but you know, you really got to give it some thought.
Did you guys go to the same college?
No, we did the whole long distance thing and everything. So we really
must have been. How hard was that to be in a school? So you had to unplug from every social situation you were in because you were afraid that maybe it would, right?
It was very hard. It takes a certain kind of guy, I think. And I think I'm that kind of guy. So I was able to do it, not too bad, but it did suck. And I wouldn't do it again. But
well, you probably won't go to college again, so that's good news. Unless you go to grad school, you could get a long distance relationship and just go to grad school just to enjoy that.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an accountant. CPA.
Very exciting. So,
very.
Are you in the city?
Yeah, I'm in the city.
Would you live in
it? So, it is a good city. Yeah, I live in Manhattan. So, it is a good city.
Oh, shit. First of all, 28 is so young in New York City. Like there are
New York City, though, is a little insane these days.
It is.
It's a little too much.
It is, but there are so many different scenes. I mean, we understand the comedy scene. Like you start hanging around some of these things, the music scene and whatnot, the art scene. Like there are just so many places you can plug yourself into, start to get to know people, start to develop that. And
you could become the next Lena Dunham. You're going to be naked all the time, just fucking
anything. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm pretty complete novice in that whole world. So
you deserve it. I'm just saying I would avoid the club scene.
Yeah, no. Don't go to the tunnel at 5 a.m. or whatever club is going on. Yeah.
Provocateur.
You don't want to go to an after party where there's like a password you got to get in, and you know
it's all cops.
It's like at an old teddy bear factory, and you know
it's pretty intense.
It is really intense.
Yeah, I would. Danny could get swept.
I don't want Danny to get swept. Like, so don't go.
No, I won't.
Because it is
forward to that part.
Where do you live? Where do you live in the city?
Right in Manhattan. Right.
Where?
What part?
Upper East Side right now.
Upper East Side.
That's the problem. I had to move.
At least that's not...
We moved away from each other, so I'm currently in flux.
Oh, you used to live in the Upper East Side.
Oh, go to Brooklyn, man.
No, we used to live with each other, so now I'm trying to find a place and do all that mess.
You lived in the Upper East Side with her?
We lived in Chelsea. Now I'm living in the Upper East Side.
Oh, both very cool neighborhoods.
Chelsea. We lived in Chelsea for 3 years, and I mean, what a wonderful.
And Upper East Side is where everybody wants to live right now. So.
It's nice. Kind of. But I mean, there are so many great places to go, and again, so many great sort of scenes to get into, and as long as it's not super crazy. I mean, you can't treat it like you're, we have friends who came out, gay friends who came out, and like when they come out for the first time, they go insane.
Insane.
It's like, it literally every single person they can get their hands on. So just be smart about that. Don't rush into it. But
are you from New York?
No, I'm from Kansas City. I came to New York.
We're from St. Louis.
Nice. Fiance. So that's kind of why.
These guys are from St. Louis. So they're neighbors.
We know the Midwestern. So would you go to Shawnee Mission South?
East.
Wait a minute. Are they the Eagles?
No, the Lancers.
Lancers. Well, all right.
Where'd you go to college?
University of Denver.
That's interesting.
Great city too.
So.
All right, man. You have a lot of great things ahead. Obviously, this is traumatic and shitty to at least unplug yourself from this person.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple weeks, but I know time will get better.
And it will get better for her too. I know you're probably worried about how she's feeling a little bit, but she will do fine. She will be okay.
And unfortunately, as much as you want to support her and be a good friend, probably the best thing is no contact for both of you for 6 months.
That's what I've been doing pretty much.
Yeah,
that's
out of compassion for her, not out of selfishness.
Yeah, I've been trying.
It's like sleep training our baby. It's like you want to go in and just be like, you're going to be okay, but it's better to stay out of the room.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Good luck, okay?
All right. Well, thanks, man.
All right. Let's go.
Sensitive.
I know. It's tough stuff. It's Mike, good. 43. What's up, Mike?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Last night, I learned that my sister-in-law has been abusing hydrocodone, quote-unquote, on the weekends for about 6 months at least. She's got a history of a narcotics addiction, but she's been clean for 15 years.
She's not clean anymore. Mm-hmm. She's not. Mm-hmm. And by the way,
exactly.
And trust me, she's not just using on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. That's why I put that in quotes. My question is, what can I do to help her from out of state and... What can I do to help my wife, who has spent a good portion of her life suffering through this kind of addiction? with her sister.
Yeah. I mean, it probably – they must have had a mom or a dad that was a drug addict or alcoholic. Is that right?
Well, it was an adoption.
Oh, they were both adopted?
Just her sister.
Just her sister.
Just her sister was adopted.
Yeah.
Well, really all your sister can do is take – I mean, primarily what she can do is take care of herself. And that means going to Al-Anon or getting a therapist to help deal with the pain of having a loved one with this condition. It's very frustrating. And dealing with the powerlessness that, in fact, she has over her sister's condition is something that she needs other people to support her on. And not only to help herself, but if she's going to be of any help to her sister, she's got to have that support buttress there, that scaffolding. Mm-hmm. I call it Ariadne's cord. If you're going into the Matrix,
you got to have something tighter on your waist.
That's exactly right.
To pull you out of that, or else you get in. It's like trying to help, even if you're a lifeguard trying to help someone who is drowning, you will go down with them.
Unless you don't have
a life jacket on or somebody pulling you back up.
That's right. So I always liken it to the Audrey 2, the plant, the little shop of horrors.
Yeah.
You know, if you go in the room with the plant, the plant's going to eat you.
Yeah.
For sure. No matter what. Unless you go in with somebody to pull you back out.
That's right.
And Audrey 2 is a perfect model for alcoholism and addiction.
What do you make of the idea, and this is something that's actually been going on in the sort of the NFL, is the idea that, okay, you got some states like, you know, where the Denver Broncos are that, you know, pot's legal. In Seattle, pot's legal. And a lot of these athletes that, you know, they're using pot instead of these sort of hydrocodone and all these other things. Obviously, you can develop an addiction to pot. But, like,
yeah, if I'm saying make a choice, if I have to make a devil's deal, pot's for sure.
Doesn't
better.
It feel like that's just far more, you know, the pills are just far more, like,
yes,
addictive?
Far more addictive.
And far more accepted.
Yeah, and by the way, to be fair, maybe less effective in chronic pain.
Yeah.
Maybe. But the problem is that, you know, the guy that's choosing pot over hydrocodone is a drug addict.
Right.
Let's face it.
Yes.
And you could argue that marijuana maintenance is better than methadone maintenance, you know, which I would argue is true. That's accurate.
Yeah.
We're not saying get
your sister-in-law on pot, but
right. You know. But at a certain point, it becomes a philosophical question. If somebody's not interested in getting better, they're making a choice amongst evils. Okay, that's the lesser evil for sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do with your sister? Has she gotten the opiates?
Hmm.
Mike.
Yes.
I just lost you for a second. How is she getting the hydrocodone?
She was in a bad car accident. She was hit several months ago, and so they were prescribed.
All right. So I promise you, when she was lying, Tom Arnold told me this. He got in a terrible motorcycle accident, and he said he was lying in the street in pain, and he heard the ambulance coming. And when he heard the siren, he thought, oh, Finn, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. Look what I got.
Morphine. I guarantee you your sister-in-law thought that as she was in the car.
Jackpot.
Yeah, jackpot. A perfect excuse. So you need to call the physician who is prescribing and make an appeal. And say, look, my sister is a serious drug addict. You have inadvertently reawakened her disease. Please refer her for treatment. Please. So if you can get the medical personnel to step in, you'll have done something.
Now,
what my fear, of course, is, and this is what doctors do, and this is an interesting story. You guys will like this.
Yeah.
Our brothers I'm looking at, which is the doctor will go, okay. Oh, my God. I had no idea. Oh, my God. This patient is incorrigible. What a terrible patient. Miss Smith. Miss Mike's sister-in-law, you are you've been abusing these drugs.
Not handling it the right way.
No more of this. No more of this. Not in my practice. Where do you think that sister-in-law is going next?
Somewhere to another doctor.
Another doctor. Now multiple other doctors.
Multiple.
She learns how to do this.
Right.
And if she gets cut off by those guys, what's the next move?
On the street.
Heroin. Absolutely.
On the street.
And that's where the heroin's coming in right now. So this is the risk of the way physicians handle this problem.
So can you talk to the physician and say, this is how you have to handle this?
Well,
I mean, that's tricky too.
Please refer. She's not a bad patient. She knows recovery. She's been recovered before. It's, you know, she can get back into it, but you need an expert. You need somebody who really understands how to support her in her recovery. And it's possible, of course, she'll say, fuck you, I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm.
She depends how deep in she is, and she may have to go down a little further before she's willing. And the doctor's got to be prepared for that too. And then if he or she decides that they want to try Suboxone, which is a replacement drug, or if she goes to a doctor that offers Suboxone, which is so common these days, get that person to please put it on a time contingent basis, because your sister-in-law has had real recovery and she deserves a chance at real recovery again. Got it?
Right.
It's kind of complicated, but I think you kind of understand what you're dealing with. So, all right, my friend.
All right.
Good luck with that one.
Thank you very much.
All right, you got it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You guys seem to know a lot about this. Is there
my wife's mom and stepdad were both 30 years in recovery, but her mom, 30 years for alcohol, but her mom definitely through various operations and whatnot and various like medical things to use pills. She's no longer alive.
Oh,
and I worked at a place called Jack's Jewish Alcoholics, Chemically Dependent Persons and Significant Others in New York City.
How'd you get interested in that?
It was my first job. Wow. My first job in the city, and I needed a job. My cousin worked there and got me involved. And it's actually, because a lot of Jews, anyone who doesn't want to go to recovery will look for any excuse not to go to recovery. So Jews are like, what? They say the other prayer. We do this in a church basement.
I can't give anybody any little excuse.
And so this place was like, all right, well, we'll build a supplement program that makes sure that you stay in the 12-step program. But hey, we're going to meet and do this Jewish event, or we're going to help Jewish people in recovery.
We're going to make you feel guiltier about what
we're going to guilt you into more.
But isn't it interesting how when you work around it, there's sort of – it's obvious how it works.
Totally,
how it affects your brain, how it makes you work, what
recovery is. By the way,
why there's such bizarre misconception about it is so troubling to me, because it's so obvious when you spend time around it.
It's so obvious how it works. It's so, if you're around people, there's sort of behavioral patterns for how they're looking for. I mean, again, like the car accident, which should be the worst thing in the world that you're in a car accident. You do not want to be in a car accident. Those things suck shit. It's like it ruins your car. It throws your life into things.
And yet, if you know addicts, you know exactly how they think when they're in a car accident.
They're like, here we go.
I was watching a 30 for 30, and I forgot what it was, but it was not even 30 for 30. It was an interview with Tony Mandrich, who was a fantastic football player who used steroids and then transitioned into drugs and whatnot, and I believe his brother was dying. And he went in to see him in the hospital room, and his brother was dying from a terminal disease, and he said, that guy is the luckiest guy in the world because he's getting a morphine drip.
Right.
That's how fucked up it is, and that's how much it grabs your brain in that way.
And you have to think like that to understand it. It's not a normal way to think.
No. No.
It's not. You got to go. It's literally the opposite of what it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
has to be automatic. And I know when I'm working with addicts, and sometimes I'm like getting involved in some of their more psychological, interpersonal stuff, and I'm thinking, awesome, insight. And my recovering peers, when I'd come out of a session like that, or who maybe be sitting with me, because I won't see them alone, because again, you got to have the cord.
Yeah,
they'll kick me in the chair afterwards and go, I just want to do drugs. You just want to get high. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That bullshit he was
all
feeding you.
Stuff. Yeah.
Just all that good insight about his mom and his dad, those feelings he was having. It's all bullshit.
He just wants to do. Driven by the
He sees a big RX desire. Over your head, and he wants you to prescribe. That's all.
Right.
It's flashing. He's got his claws in you now.
That's crazy.
Right. All right, let's wrap the show up. I want to invite you guys back to do another Adam and Drew podcast.
Would love to.
Again, if you'd be kind enough.
Yeah.
Again, the stand-up special is What Are We Talking About? Available on Netflix and iTunes. Sklarbro Country.
Very nicely done.
Tuesdays and Fridays on iTunes. And we'll be back with more Adam and Drew. And until then, I'll say on behalf of Adam Carolla, mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.